गुरु ब्रह्मा गुरु विष्णु गुरु देवो महेश्वरा गुरु साक्षात परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्री गुरवे नमः। Good morning, everyone. Nice to be back. From today's Dancing with Shiva, Sloka 24, what is the nature of Lord Kartikeya? Lord Kartikeya Murugan, first guru and Pleiadian master of Kundalini Yoga, was born of God Shiva's mind. His dynamic power awakens spiritual cognition to propel souls onward in their evolution to Shiva's feet. Bhasya. Lord Kartikeya flies through the mind's vast substance from planet to planet. He could well be called the emancipator, ever available to the call of those in distress. Lord Kartikeya, God of will, direct cognition, and the purest childlike divine love, propels us onward on the righteous way through religion, his father's law. Majestically seated on the Manipura chakra, this scarlet-hued God blesses mankind and strengthens our will when we lift to the inner sky through sadhana and yoga. The Yogapada begins with the worship of him. The yogi locked in meditation venerates Kartikeya Skanda as his mind becomes as calm as Saravana, the lake of divine essence. The Kundalini force within everyone is held and controlled by this powerful God, first among renunciates, dear to all sannyasins. Revered as Murugan in the south, he is commander-in-chief of the great Devanic army, a fine dynamic soldier of the within, a fearless defender of righteousness. He is divinity emulated in form. The Vedas say, to such a one who has his stains wiped away, the venerable Sanak Kumara shows the further shore of darkness. Him they call Skanda. So in our tradition of Saiva Siddhanta, as it says here, the Yogapada begins with the worship of him. Pretty straightforward. And in our temple here, for whatever reason, our Murugan shrine isn't the same every day of the year in its strength. It is quite strong on Murugan's festival days versus other days. So if you're trying to get acquainted with Lord Murugan, or you're trying to deeper your relationship with Lord Murugan through this temple, that works best on his festival days. Skanda Shasti is particularly good because it's more than one day. Six chances, though it could be five. Even though it's called Skanda Shasti, sometimes it's only 5 days long because of the nature of titis. So the Yogapada begins with the worship of him, and then more specifically, the Kundalini force within everyone is held and controlled by this powerful God, first among renunciates. So we're trying to have the Kundalini awaken, but in a controlled way. So it's a gentle awakening through worshiping of Lord Murugan and through the study of Gurudeva's teachings and the practice of daily sadhana. The Kundalini awakens in a very gentle and natural way. We don't want to awaken it too quickly or in an unnatural way, and then it can go up the wrong channel, and it can also cause shaking. Some people were twitching. You may have seen some people practicing Siddha Yoga, the Muktananda group, they twitch. So that's not good, you know. It means it didn't quite go up in the right way. So we want to, if we do all this, then there's no problem. It just naturally and slowly goes up the right channel. Well, how does that relate to Patanjali? You are all dying to find the answer to that, right? That was what was on your mind since I started talking about Sloka 24. Patanjali says, through self-study, communion is established with one's chosen deity, Ishta Devata, chosen deity. Through self-study, Swadaya, communion is established. So that means we're getting close, right? Communion means there's contact. There's a sense of closeness. So how do we create a sense of closeness through Swadaya? What is Swadaya? Well, in Patanjali's system, it's a little broader. According to the commenters, because there's no separate one for japa. In our system, there's 10 niyamas, and Patanjali's is only 5. So the commentators say this one includes japa. So repeating a mantra to Lord Murugan is a very important way to get closer. Scriptural study as well. So that idea is basically, I'm trying to show it's found in Patanjali's Yoga Sutras. And from today's lesson 24, from Merging with Shiva, subconscious basement. When you first think about practicing yoga, you're focused on your thoughts, controlling your thoughts, which is the conscious mind. You know, our thoughts are past, present, future, different kinds of thoughts. And we're very familiar with that. So controlling thoughts, we tend to think of as that's what's required to be successful in meditation. However, Gurudeva and Patanjali both say, well, you know, there's more to the mind than just the conscious mind. We have to get the subconscious mind in order as well. So how do we do that? Well, there's a number of techniques in Gurudeva's teachings to do that. This is, we're going to read one of them. And in Patanjali, that's called samskaras. So the samskara chitta, subconscious mind, is what has to be adjusted. So it's not just the conscious mind, which is our first thought. I've never had, you know, when people ask me about meditation, they say, I sit to meditate and I can't control my thoughts, what do I do? That's a standard question. When someone talks to me about meditation, they almost always say that. They don't say anything else. They say, I can't control my thoughts. I want to meditate, but I can't control my thoughts. No one ever said, how do I adjust my subconscious mind? My samskaras are causing some blockage in my meditation. You know, no one's ever said that. So this talks about that, subconscious basement. I liken the subconscious mind to a basement. Those of you who have lived in the same house for a number of years have observed the following. As life progresses in the home, old things make way for the new, and the old things invariably are put into the basement. And in Hawaii, they're put in the garage, right? We don't have a basement. Oh, and usually the garage is open so you can see how much someone's accumulating. We were accumulating in our Silpi house. We were accumulating computer boxes and it just looked so bad we finally put a door on it. Keep our accumulation private. The basement is likened to the subconscious mind. The main floor to the conscious mind. One is putting too many things too fast into the basement and is too busy enjoying the new things. Passing through the conscious mind into the subconscious basement, there is no time to keep the basement in order. Suppose there is an earthquake, an emotional upheaval in life, and the entire house shakes. The lampshades of the big lamps get mixed up with the shades of the small ones. The pillows of the old sofa get mixed up with the pillows of the armchairs. Should we enter the basement, it may take us several hours to find the articles we're looking for. That is the subconscious mind. It gets all mixed up if we do not look into ourselves constantly and put our subconscious basement in order. So that's the practice. We need to reflect and keep the subconscious mind straight. In other words, particularly when emotional events happen in our life and things don't go quite like we wanted them to, we need to make sure we've resolved all of that and it's not just bouncing around in a unresolved manner. Our subconscious basement is created first through association with our immediate friends and family and the interrelated strains, tensions, misunderstandings, joys, pleasures, happy memories, and sorrows. In a lesser degree, it is created in the outside world through the people to whom we have become attached. These attachments are reflections of what is already in the subconscious basement. In other words, we bring out of these people qualities similar to the qualities in our own subconscious. However, if every day at a certain time we meditate, go down into that basement and put a few things in order, pretty soon our basement is orderly and clean. We begin to understand the subconscious, seeing it as transparent and we have no attachment to anything in it. We are not holding on to any old hates, fears, or ancient misunderstandings within ourselves. When we are not harboring negative attachments to anything that happened 20 or 30 years ago, thus creating tensions in our body and confusion in our mind, the subconscious becomes a powerhouse. The superconscious energies flood easily through you, bringing into your life an abundance of creativity, intuition, perception, and bliss. The subconscious in this pure state is of great benefit to you both inwardly and outwardly when properly programmed. In other words, it becomes sub-superconscious. That's what Gurudev is getting at without saying it. I'll read this sentence again. We are not harboring negative attachments to anything that happened 20 or 30 years ago. So when we were at the temple, one of the events was had some personal testimony in it, and a gentleman said he regretted very much that he hadn't done something for his aunt when she passed away. So he had this regret. It just really bothered him. Well, there's a lack of understanding there. I didn't have a chance to stick it in one of my talks. I gave 7 talks there, though they were all pretty short. But what I would have said is, events of the past that aren't fully resolved will come around in the present. We have another chance. It won't be the same person necessarily, but it'll be the same situation. And the classic example I usually give is, if as a teenager we were typically rebellious and gave our parents a bad time, we may feel bad about that now in the present. We say, I really shouldn't have treated my parents that way. So life, because we feel that way, life will bring to us a situation where some individuals who were age-wise the same difference approximately as your parents were will come into your life and you have an opportunity to help them. But if you're so focused on the past, you won't see the present. So we have to let go of the feeling that, oh, we did this in the past, it's terrible. And let it go and say, well, that situation comes around again, I'm going to handle it this way. So we just let go of the past and have a plan for handling it if it comes to us in the future. So that's the idea. Another aspect of this statement is negative attachments. Usually, when we think of attachment, if I brought up the subject, you know, what are you attached to? Well, I'm attached to coffee in the morning, I'm attached to rice for lunch, I'm attached to this. You know, you think of positive things, right? You would think of what you enjoy in life, pleasurable experiences, that would be what would come to your mind as your attachments. But what Gurudeva is saying is, when we are not harboring negative attachments, you're not talking about positive attachments, which is the other form of attachments, and it's the one we normally think of. He's talking about negative attachments. So attachments are of two kinds, positive and negative. And the negative ones we have to be more observant of. In other words, the positive ones are, the pleasurable ones, shall we say, are more obvious. The negative ones are more subtle. Therefore, we have to look for them. It's this kind of thing where we regret what we did 20 years ago and it still bothers us. We're attached to something. Or we had a very painful experience. People treated us a certain way. Or we had an embarrassing lecture we gave. It didn't work out and we still think about it. These are the painful experiences in our life which we think about on a regular basis, and there's no reason to be thinking about them. Nobody said, "You remember when?" There's no reason to think about it. Popping up in our own mind. Those are our negative attachments. And Gurudeva gives us tools such as Vasana Daha Tantra for getting rid of them. And Patanjali has the same dual definition of attachment. So that's what I thought I'd end with. We have to stick it in the perspective. It's called kleshas. Remember the kleshas? Five forms of wrong cognition. So wrong cognition is the concept that Gurudeva explains as, in cognizant ability, he says, the seed of desire is a false concept, meaning wrong cognition. Wrong cognition means a false concept. So the seed of desire is a false concept in relationship to corresponding objects. It's that idea that if I have a Mercedes, I'll be rich and famous, because that's what the person in the ad looked like. He was rich and famous, and all I have to do to be rich and famous is buy a Mercedes. It's that easy. So that's a false concept. So something has gotten into our mind. In that case, through advertising, that's what advertising is trying to do. It makes you feel, you have to have an Apple Watch, or you're just, you're not going to be happy. Oh, advertising tries to put false concepts in your mind. So that's wrong cognition. So there's five forms. The kleshas are ignorance, identification with I am-ness, attraction, aversion, and clinging to life. Ignorance is the field where the other kleshas germinate, whether dormant, attenuated, intercepted, or activated. Next one explains it. Ignorance is seeing that which is impermanent, impure, sorrowful, or not self as permanent, pure, joyful, and as self. As I mentioned before, when I explained this, normally ignorance means you don't know something. You get a new computer, you're ignorant of how to work it until you read the manual. So that's normally what ignorance means. I don't know, I'm ignorant about it. But in this case, ignorance means you're misperceiving. You're misperceiving the world. You're seeing it as permanent, pure, joyful, and as self, when actually it's impermanent, impure, sorrowful, or not self. I am-ness is the identification, as it were, of the powers of vision and visioner. That means we think we're a person. Attraction is that which rests on pleasant experiences. So that's one kind of attachment. Aversion is that which rests on sorrowful experiences. So that's the other kind of attachment we need to get rid of. Clinging to life, flowing along by its own momentum, is rooted thus even in sages. So that's the idea of, I don't want to be omnipresent, I want to be finite. We're clinging to life as we know it. I don't want to be all-knowing, I want to be just knowing a little bit. I don't want to be everyone in the world. I just want to be myself. We're clinging to life as we know it, which is natural. Now, I've had some people say, well, I don't want to merge into Shiva. I don't want Vishvagrasa. They're clinging to life as they know it. They're not looking at it from Shiva's point of view. So it's very simple to overcome that one. All you have to do is figure out, well, what is Shiva's point of view in this matter? So from Shiva's point of view, Shiva's always everyone and everything. So if you can adjust to Shiva's point of view, then you overcome clinging to life as we know it. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful day. Om Namah Shivaya.